Welcome to Changemaker with founder of Gypsy Tea and social entrepreneur Zina Muzika.
This new podcast is to help you embrace change and experience amazing people and entrepreneurs. We're going to be sharing secrets, habits, and change-making abilities with you so that you can apply them to your life and make a life of your dreams.
This is Changemaker with Zina Muzika.
Hey, Changemakers. Welcome to Changemaker. I'm your host, Zina Muzika. I'm here with Catherine Buttig today. She is an internationally celebrated yoga teacher and author known for her accessibility, humor, and ability to empower her students through her message, Aim True. And I happen to love Catherine because I follow her on Instagram and I love her dog. So, Catherine, your dog has won my heart. And
me too.
Yeah, I can tell. I was like, all right, hook, line, and sinker on that one. Welcome to Changemaker. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. So you're in Charleston. I'm on the West Coast. And I think you used to be a teacher out here, yeah?
Yes, I did. I lived in Venice, California for 8 years and taught in Santa Monica.
Great. What a great place to be. I live in Ojai, and that's where I'm recording.
Beautiful.
I know. Right. I'm recording out of a yurt, which is awfully fun.
Hard life.
I know. Every time I complain, I'm like, wait a second. This is bad. So tell me how you came to yoga.
I was a tomboy when I was a little girl, and I've always been very active in sports. And then I transitioned from the sport world into theater because I fell in love with the stage. And during school, you can either choose to be in theater or sports. You can't really do one. You have to choose one or the other. So slowly that took over. And I went to the University of Virginia for college, where I was doing a ton of musical theater. And one of my dance girlfriends went off for the summer in New York and did this ballet camp where they integrated yoga into the program. So she came back all amped up about this thing called yoga. And, you know, I had dabbled in a few classes at the gym and stuff like that. But she was hell-bent on making this happen. So we went downtown to a proper yoga studio. I really hated the first class.
It's hard.
Well, it wasn't even hard. I didn't like the teacher. You know, it was one of those experiences where I couldn't jive with him. His language was a little too esoteric for my taste. And I thought he was being very touchy-feely with me, which turns out, you know, teachers touch you in yoga, but I didn't know that at the time. So I kind of left with this really bad taste in my mouth, and she went, no, trust me, let's try another teacher, which we did. And her name was Jennifer Elliott, and I fell madly in love with her and her teachings. And that was the beginning of a very long love affair for me. Oh,
it's great. Yeah. It's great. And you're a Midwest girl. I see that you are from Lawrence or Kansas City.
I was born in Kansas City, but grew up in Lawrence.
Okay. I went to college there. I went to college in Nevada, Missouri, about an hour and a half south, in an all-women's college. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and I saw Nirvana in Lawrence. I'm aging myself. All right. Yeah, it was – I mean, seriously, I was like, I love this place. But yeah, so I have a listener question for you, and my friends love you, by the way. My friend Maggie Lang wants to know how you take care of yourself and get solo time in what seems like a whirlwind schedule and travel. You want to answer that?
Sure. Yeah. It's so deeply, deeply important. And I've been very blessed to have the schedule that I have and have the demand. And I don't take that for granted, but you can't be successful and busy without having the complete opposite, which is that downtime that you talk about. And so I've made it very clear with my team and the people who book me that I'm very happy to go out into the world and do as much as I can, but I need that to be balanced out with being home in Charleston with my family. And so I'm very specific about how much I'm booking these days and making sure it's very important when I do it. And when I'm home, I'm home. Like, I don't work here. I mean, that's not actually, I totally just lied to you. I don't teach at a yoga studio when I'm here. So when I'm home, it's dedicated to my blogs, to my book, to my articles. And I'm just going to go ahead and call social media a job as well, because that's what it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when I'm at home, I try to limit my time on the computer too. I wake up morning is normally when I use my time on the computer, and I get a couple hours in, do my emails, do my writings, and then I try to put it away.
Yeah.
Because I live in a beautiful city. I have access to the ocean, to the creek. I can paddleboard. My parents are 15 minutes away, so I get to spend quality time with them, which is amazing. And I try to go out downtown and eat meals with my husband. We like to try new restaurants. And if we're home, I'm cooking every single night. So I try to hit up the market, and I'm always creating recipes, whether it's for my next book or for my blog. So that's cathartic for me, you know, taking the time to do simple stuff, like reading a fiction novel, reading a book that has nothing at all to do with
Okay, I have to ask you, what are you reading?
Okay, well, you're going to laugh. It's not fiction right now, but I'm reading Ronda Rousey's autobiography. Oh. She's the MMA fighter.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I love her.
That's awesome. I just read Where'd You Go, Bernadette? And I, my husband and I drove up to Napa with the kids, and I was in the car, and I never get to read fiction. And it is hysterical. I highly recommend it. It's called Where'd You Go, Bernadette? You'll laugh out loud often. It's absolutely fabulous.
I'm going to put that on my list.
Yeah, I got to. So, you know, what happened? So by the way, I agree. It's finding the right teacher. My local yoga studio. Have you ever heard of the Yoga Crib? It's put on by Lulu Bandez here.
Yes, I have, actually.
We should definitely have you here at some point for that. It is such an amazing event. But, you know, my first yoga class that I really felt like I belonged in was actually called Stiff White Guys. And I was like, okay, this
obviously.
I was like, you know what? I don't feel intimidated. I don't feel fat. Like, I'm going in for this. And every single person in the class was a woman. There was not one white guy in the class.
Oh my gosh.
But it was one of those things where I was like, you know what? I like friendly yoga. And I really think that's what you've brought to the table.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, it's just yoga can be this, like I said, the first class I went to, this guy was just so over the top and esoteric that there was no connection for me. And while yoga can go to these unbelievable spiritual platforms, if you go too high, you're not going to access the people who are new to it. And it's, you know, finding a way to speak spiritual talk in accessible terms and in a way that's relatable to everyone. And more than anything, speaking like yourself. You know, I know a lot of teachers who put on the quote unquote teacher voice, or they put on their teacher
the guru,
hat.
The guru.
Yeah, and they totally transform, and it is so obnoxious.
I know.
I hate it.
Yeah. So tell me, how did you go from teaching yoga to a yoga superstar? Because I know some rise through the ranks and get that fame and have a lot of followers, but you know, it can't be easy. Was it just that you had a fresh voice and being more down to earth, or what was it that got you, you know, into this world where you're teaching on an international level?
You know, I think it's multifaceted. For starters, when I was teaching, it was a very different time. It wasn't as saturated as a market as it is now. So I had that to my advantage. I also have the advantage that I'm a petite white blonde woman, and I mean, I've got that going for me. You know, I'm a marketable look.
At least you're honest.
Well, you know,
it's
mean,
true.
I have a marketable look. I fit into what media likes to see in general, and so that didn't hurt me. It didn't also hurt that I was 21 when I started doing this, so I was totally fresh faced. You know, straight out of college. Working, doing these yoga practices for 2.5 hours every day. I lived in LA. I was super tan and fantastic shape. So, you know, aesthetically, I had that. But I think what gave me lasting power is I'm not maybe what you would associate with that stereotypical looking kind of girl.
Yeah.
I'm very honest. I'm going to tell you exactly how it is. I like to make people laugh. I'm not going to monitor myself. I have no filter, which honestly kind of gets me into trouble sometimes.
Me too. That's why I like you.
Yeah, thanks. You know? Oh, but it's, you know, it one of the biggest compliments I get is, wow, you're so real, which makes me laugh because what isn't real? You know, technically we're all real. And so it's a very odd compliment, but it just goes to show in this day and age how many people are filtering their entire life, basically.
Absolutely.
And they're putting exactly what they want you to see. And teachers, we have to be very careful because we're given this unbelievable platform where student loves teacher.
Yeah.
And they're going to fall in love with you no matter what.
Yeah.
And it's a very powerful position to have. And the power goes to people's heads quickly.
Absolutely.
And we have followers now. We have likes. We have, you know, we're famous. We're all a celebrity in our own shape and form because of social media. And then that goes to our heads. And how popular are we? How much do people like this post? Wow, I'm so important. And it's fictional. This is stuff that if the internet crashed, this would all go away. And what is going to withstand beyond all of that is your actual teachings, what you mean, what your lessons are, what you've learned, what you're sharing. And I keep that at the heart of every single thing I do. And aside from, you know, those technicalities I told you at the beginning, I believe my success has come from the fact that I love what I do, and everything I share is because I want to share it. And the second I don't want to share something anymore, I move on and I evolve. And because I have to stay authentic to what I want to do, because it's going to show if I'm unhappy.
Yeah.
And I have to be happy.
Well, and let's talk about your theme of Aim True. I'm so struck by that. It's so simple and it's so clear. And, you know, my name means authenticity in Chinese, and I'm a fair trade tea activist. I had a tea company, and I'm all about authenticity. But I find that oftentimes it can be hard to be really authentic because, you know, telling the truth sometimes means you have to make big sweeping changes or you stop doing something that's working really well for your life. So talk a little bit about how you came to Aim True and what it means.
Well, a huge part of aiming true, like you just said, the difficult part about being authentic is that you're basically setting yourself up to be a target if you're authentic. Because if you say what you mean, then you're going to have to, you know, handle the dish afterwards of what's coming at you. So in a nutshell, and I'll get back to that part again, but in a nutshell, aiming true, it's derivative of the Greek goddess Artemis, who is the goddess of the moon, the goddess of the hunt, and a goddess that I've just admired my entire life. And it came from a prayer that I found to her, said, "Artemis, goddess of the moon, make my aim true." And that just launched a life for me, basically. And I was so inspired by her and this prayer that I had to figure out what aiming true means. And through years of experience and travel and life, I realized that aiming true is this ability for me to really know what my natural talents are, what my gifts are, what my passions are. The ability to actually apply them on a daily basis to my life and to my surroundings, and knowing when I do this that not everybody's going to agree with me and that the opinions of others are going to come in really heavy and hard at me, and I'm going to have to learn how to drop my fear and continue to step through all of that mess because this is what really matters to me. And when I can, you know, stick to my guns and put my big girl panties on, that's how I hit my mark all the time. But these projections are going to be regular. And often when we find what we're really good at or what our voice is, people are going to disagree. And that's where I see people falling back into the shadow because it's hurtful and it's alarming and it's exhausting. And I'm trying to use the Aim True message as a way to, you know, empower people to realize this isn't going to be a cakewalk, but it's going to be worth it. And if you can build up your armor to such a way where, you know, you're this warrior for passion and this warrior for what matters to you, you can get through to the other side.
I agree with you. And being okay with not having everybody like you, I think is, you know, when I started the tea company, I had a very big passion. You know, I started it to save my son's life. And so when I found that women in the tea fields they had very high infant mortality rates. They didn't have toilets. All of this was happening over there. I came back saying, you know, what are we doing? We're over here drinking tea, thinking that we're all, you know, being healthy and being all zen, but we're actually killing people 9,000 miles away. We don't realize it by not choosing fair trade. And I made a lot of enemies, but I have to say passion and having a mission and being authentic, it's the best time management tool. Because it clears all the clutter out of your life when it comes to people, when it comes to what you do on a day-to-day basis. And activism, you know, it is a form of activism.
Oh, for sure. And any activist will tell you that you're going to have the good and bad side according to someone's head. And, you know, you can't post a good thing without someone finding something wrong with it.
Yeah.
And like, you're going to post about fair trade, or I'm going to post about, you know, something about animal rights and in a very like, please help kind of way. And even if you're putting all of your love into it, someone's going to come screaming back at you for why this is horrible and how you're doing something wrong, or why this and the bigger picture doesn't even matter. And it's exhausting work,
yeah.
Especially when you care so deeply about it. But the thing is, you care so deeply about it, so you can't give up just because it's exhausting.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You just have to make time for yourself to be like, okay, I'm a good person. People love me.
Well, that's another question. I mean, I'm an introvert most of the day, and then I gather the strength and I can go out and be an extrovert and an activist and out in the public eye. But I have to have that time to be introverted. And that really is my meditation practice. It starts with that. And I when I discovered meditation, it was my meditation teacher told me, oh my God, you're never going to be truly successful because you're a blender without a top. He said, you're all over the map. All your energy is flying out of your head. And his name's Jagat Jodhi and he's a Sikh. So, but it's one of those things with you, like, what is your actual practice? Like, we know there's yoga. Do you do yoga just for yourself still?
Yes, I rarely actually go to studios to practice anymore. And that's not because I don't want to, but I've been very spoiled to have just the best teachers in the world. And I miss them deeply. But I my practice is for me completely. So when I practice, it's not to attain a fancy asana or or a physical goal, really. It's more of a maintenance thing for me. And it's also for me as a teacher to keep myself fresh for my students as well. You know, what can I practice that's interesting that I can bring to the table that's going to light my students up?
But, and where do you find that? You mentioned your teachers aren't around anymore. Where do you go for inspiration?
You know, it's funny, but I tell my students to do things like read fiction, because I find my inspiration in the most unusual places. And it doesn't have to be I go to a yoga class to get inspired. You know, I recently, about 4 months ago, took up martial arts, and I'm practicing karate, kung fu, and jujitsu. And I find inspiration from martial arts. Yeah. And then I'm pulling inspiration from those classes and bringing that back into my teaching. Or, you know, I'll read something in a book and think, oh, that's so inspiring, and that wakes me up. Or I'll flip through Instagram and see some weird, crazy pose, and then I can build an entire class around something weird like that. So it's just keeping your eyes open and not looking in all the obvious places.
I love that. I interview a lot of very, very, very wealthy, successful entrepreneurs, and they always say to stay curious. Mm-hmm. And they're really, curiosity seems to be the ongoing theme with people who are successful, because they never actually solidify. It's like, oh, this is working right now, but I wonder what could happen next. So I love that. Tell me about, we were talking about activism. Tell me about Poses for Pause.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, so Poses for Pause was something that I co-founded back in, I think it was 2007 or 2008. And animals, especially dogs, have just been my Achilles heel for my entire life. They're Ashi, my little one. I have four dogs now, actually, but Ashi was my original pup, and she just melts my heart. She's my better half. And and in yoga, it's so easy to give back. It's called seva in yoga, yeah. And it's something that the community encourages everyone to do. So my seva was to build this awareness for animals and to show that all you have to do is put together a class and take the proceeds and donate to your favorite shelter or something simple like that. So what Poses for Paws turned into was I basically use it as a platform to build awareness and raise money. And then I take that money and I donate it to causes that are near and dear to me. So for example, I worked with Beagle Freedom Project for years, and I adore what they're doing, because not only are they going in and saving these beagles that are used in animal testing, they're bringing awareness to the fact that these animals are used for animal testing. And this is something that a lot of people don't
even know.
Beagles
are?
Oh yeah. Beagles are used all the time for animal testing because they're so docile. It's really sad.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
It's well, you're bringing awareness to us right now.
Yeah. So, but, you know, and so what we can do, and it's horrible. I mean, they are raised there and they're killed there, and they never see life outside of a cage, and they don't have a name. They have a tattoo on the inside of their ear, and they cut their vocal cords, and it's horrible. And I have two dogs that are half beagles, so it makes me want to kill someone.
Yeah.
And, but you know, it's a double whammy though, because then people go look at their products and they can see, is this a cruelty-free product? And because so many things on the market are on the market that are still tested on animals that have been on the market for years. Mm-hmm. And America is one of the only countries that still does this. And it's really archaic and brutal. And And I would love to help people realize, like, we can get rid of this. This doesn't need to be the way it's done.
No.
You know, and it's an amazing platform, and I want to continue to do more and bigger things with Poses for Paws or use my voice for other groups, but it's just to show people you can make a difference. It doesn't take much.
Absolutely. I was just talking one of my friends in fair trade today, big Wall Street Journal or article, you know, fair trade is the new trend in fashion. And, you know, she's been at it for 15 years. I know, because she got her organic sheets in all of that in Bed Bath & Beyond. And, you know, it's we chip away and we chip away. But I think what it is in America is people just are so busy and bombarded with information that they're just bombarded. It's almost like they're filled up with the wrong information. So they don't really have capacity to understand, you know, or, you know, they just don't know what's really happening. And I think that's what's happening with the GMO movement, with organic, exactly. with fair trade. I mean, we are on the precipice of huge change. So I really admire you for pushing forward with Poses for Paws. And I love the name, by the way.
Thank you.
So you are an Under Armour. You're part of a thing called I Will What I Want. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the I Will What I Want campaign is for the women's line for Under Armour. And it's this unbelievable campaign that they launched, I believe it was last year, and they launched it with this amazing commercial with Misty Copeland. And she is the first African-American woman to become a principal dancer.
Oh, yeah, she's incredible.
And she's unbelievable. They launched it with her and her story and how she had to completely persevere against everything and everyone telling her you're wrong, you're never going to make it. And now she's one of the leading dancers in the world. Mm-hmm. So the I will what I want is I'm going to do what I want, and will is stronger than fate. And it's to me,
will is stronger than fate.
Mm-hmm. So that application and all the women they've chosen, I mean, they're powerhouses, really, really strong, amazing women. And I'm so proud to be part of that team. Because, you know, it was weird signing with a big company like that because I had never done that before and I was a little uncomfortable. And I flew out to Baltimore. They're an American company and sat with the team. And the only thing they talked about was the message they wanted to get across to women.
I love it.
They weren't talking about their product and this and that and that. They're like, this is how we want women to feel. And at the time, they basically had black leggings and everything was still really kind of jockey for women.
Yeah,
and I was like, whatever, I'll do it. And the line is quite, you know, chic now.
It's the mission will lead a brand to the right place.
Yeah.
You know, with the tea company I had, it was fair trade. The mission was to end poverty for tea workers. Nobody needed another, you know, tea company. Nobody needs another stretchy clothing company. You know, nobody needs that. It's the mission that actually, you know, creates the culture and creates the change. And I love that you said yes. And I have a 5-year-old daughter named Mia, which is AIM backwards, which I just realized.
Aww.
But she is such a little warrior princess, and she's so tough and so different. Have you noticed with younger girls, are you starting to mentor younger women to get into the yoga world? And what do you see with Generation Y?
I mean, I am seeing younger and younger women coming to yoga, and especially with social media, I'm getting a reach to a younger platform of women. And I'll also see some teenagers starting to come into some of my workshops as well. And, you know, I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to make that work, but I would love to get into that audience more because so much of my message is needed for young women before they're deeply affected by the bombardment of society. And I feel like women are getting affected younger and younger and younger.
Absolutely.
And I'm not even a mother yet. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like
I live in Ojai, and I live here on purpose. I don't have cable television. Mia, you know, has educational apps, but she doesn't have a computer. There's not a lot of screen time, and she climbs trees, and she's like a little wild child, and she's really into animals.
Awesome.
I mean, but that's the thing is we do have to infuse our daughters and our children with, you know, nature and with an ability to think on their own. I think that's really crucial as the sexuality has become more and more prevalent, younger and younger. I mean, we were in a hotel over the weekend in Napa, and the Disney Channel was on. It was just a teenager show, but man, I was like, oh my God, like these girls are not wearing that many clothes, and these are our role models, and this is just not going to fly for me as a mom. I don't know.
No, and I feel like such a grandma saying it, but that happened recently where I saw this I don't even know how old she was. She was young, and I mean, her butt was basically hanging out of her shorts.
It kills me.
I was like, I would never let my daughter walk out of the house wearing
no,
something.
No, Mia won't even wear a dress, and she was a knight in shining armor every year at Christmas, or every year at Halloween. That's her gig. She's like a little like tomboy. But hey, I've got a couple more questions for you from sure. listeners. Jennifer Van Blair wants to know, she's a good starter, but not a good finisher. So yeah. She's wondering if you have a trick for cultivating a lifelong habit of yoga.
Gotcha. You know, it has to be fun. I guess that would be my short answer for it. You know, you're not going to finish something if you're doing it out of duty. You have to be, and it, you know, I take that back because it totally depends on your personality type. I personally have the personality where I'm very driven, but it has to be enjoyable for me to continue with it.
Yeah.
So my advice would be to keep switching it up. You know, don't take the same teacher. Don't take the same class. Unless, of course, you find a teacher or class that you need to be excited to practice. Mm-hmm. You need to look forward to it. You want it to be one of the highlights of your day. And if it's something like it's a time thing, then, you know, look for classes online that are only 20 minutes. Like, don't feel guilty if you're not putting out an hour or 90 minutes. I mean, for most people, that's a ridiculous amount of time to dedicate out of their day.
I love it. Yeah. And online, there's so many things. But I think we get wired to think we have to go somewhere to do it.
Yeah.
And if we're doing it at home, you know, we may not do it. So what would you say for someone to self-motivate?
I mean, if you can get a buddy system, that's huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, anytime that I get into something, if they hold me responsible, basically. Yeah. You know, if we're going to go take that class tomorrow at 9 a.m. and I wake up and I send a text like, I'm too tired, I'm not going to make it, then I'm the flaky one. And flaky people make me crazy. So, you know, even if I'm hungover or tired or cranky or whatever, I'm going to get my ass to that class.
I love it.
So, you know, holding each other responsible, have a buddy system, maybe give yourself a goal posture. Like, I really want to learn how to do crow pose.
Yes.
And so that way, okay, I'm going to keep working because this is my goal. And then once you get to crow, give yourself another goal.
That's great.
That way, have a checklist to go off of.
I love that. I'm going to use that to get a pose goal, you know, instead of normally I look at it as hours, you know, how many times a week am I doing it? But I like the idea of the pose. And Julie Merrick says she's wonderful and ground. And how does she keep grounded when not inverted? But then she says, I'd like to know what her morning ritual or routine is.
My morning ritual on a really good day is to wake up without an alarm clock. That's my favorite way to wake up because I have to wake up so early so often that it's really refreshing. Ashi, who's one of my puggles, she likes to wake me up by standing on me and licking me rapidly all over my face, which I have to say I actually really love because normally she's not super affectionate on her own. I have to force snuggle her. So whenever I get free kisses, I'm like, yeah, shower me. I love it.
That's great.
And my husband is really, really sweet. He's the one who, if he's not at work, he gets out of bed and he takes care of the dogs in the morning because he lets me sleep in, which he's just a very good man. And then he'll normally get back in bed and we snuggle for a little bit. Or after that, I like to go into my yoga room and I'll do a little 5 to 10 minute meditation. Ashi likes to do that too. I have one of those little mini sheepskins in my yoga room.
That's what I use. And my cat sits there when I meditate.
I put it in the sun puddle and she lies in the sun puddle. And I call that meditating for Ashi. And she meditates in her sun puddle and I do my meditation. And then I come downstairs. Currently, I'm on a big breakfast burrito kick. So I've been making breakfast burritos in the morning. They make me really happy.
You remind me of my daughter. It's so crazy. Mia is just every morning I have to make her a breakfast burrito.
I love. They're the best food group ever. So that's kind of my jam, breakfast burritos. And then I'm still in my pajamas. I normally get onto my computer and catch up with the world and return emails and see if there's anything pressing. And after that, I normally throw on my gi and go to my karate class or my jiu-jitsu class and get my sweat in. And then who knows from there.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're listening to Changemaker with Zina Muzika.
So I just want to finish with one thing. I you're a very prolific writer, and I actually contacted your agent to try to be your publisher. She's like, I'm sorry, she already has a deal. I'm like, I knew she would, but I was like, I'm in love with her dog too, so that's okay.
Well, she needs a publisher.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's actually innovative.
Ashi, yoga, a memoir.
Yeah, exactly. Yoga dog. So tell me a little bit about your writing process, because I love that about you. And by the way, your website, for those of you who haven't been to Katherine's website, it's katherynbudig.com, and it's absolutely darling, and I love it.
Thank you. You know, the writing process is, it's interesting, as you know as well. It's writing is not always easy. If I get inspired, I sit down immediately and I just go. And I've learned from much experience that even if you think you're writing utter, complete crap, just do it.
Agreed. I write every day, and yeah. I write a lot of crap.
You know? Oh, my gosh. It's just stuff where it's like, blah, blah, this doesn't make sense, blah, blah. What am I? Oh, my gosh, blah, blah. Did I even go to school? I don't know. But you know, if you just write, then eventually after maybe a page or two, you start to hit your stride. And then you realize, okay, these are my points. But if I'm writing a book, I need a fantastic outline. That is the way that I always start when I'm writing a book. And that I have to have a really gorgeous skeleton to go off of. Because when it's a big scheme like that, if I don't have a good skeleton, then it just gets a little scattered.
Yeah.
Blogs, on the other hand, I don't need to outline a blog. It's basically, I find my topic. And honestly, I find that the best writing that I do is just doing it and not over editing my work.
Agreed.
Because then I'm second guessing myself. And while maybe it may not be as coherent the first time I put it down, I am getting the points that are truly meaningful to me.
I agree. So
trusting in that.
And I love your blogs, and your blogs can be found on Mind Body Green, and you're also on Yoga Glow, and you've done videos for Gaiam. So, and you're prolific. You're writing, you know, you're not afraid to throw out a blog, and I really love it. And they're very varied. I know the other day, I was writing a blog for Parenting Magazine, and they were saying, well, we want to know what it's like for you to work at home. And I was thinking, okay, so I set up my meditation, I had my incense going, and I'm like, oh, this is so good. And it's so good to work from home, and I'm in my sunroom, my cat's on the, you know, blah, blah, blah. And oh, my favorite incense and my cup of oolong, and everything's perfect. Om. And then all of a sudden I hear this, ah, like my daughter is screaming bloody murder. And I'm like, oh my God. And I jump out of the thing, and I run into her room, and she's screaming and screaming and screaming. And I look in there, and she and my cousin's daughter, who was staying with us, are covered in lizard poop. And her bearded dragon is running on her very expensive West Elm, you know, bedding in a pile of poop. Oh my God. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, and all I could hear was E. coli. Oh no. And I throw them in the bath, and I throw the lizard back in the cage. And I'm just like, so 4 hours later, I sit down to finish the blog, and I had a choice to make.
Please tell me you included.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I think the subtitle is, this is where lizard shit gets real. In the book, so working from home. So yeah, so when you have kids, I can't wait to see what you write. The layers and layers. Well, thank you so much, Katherine. You know, and any last thoughts on building a yoga practice or staying true to your vision for your life for our listeners?
Yeah, I think the moral of the story is keep it fresh and keep it interesting. And if you're not jiving with a style or teacher, try another one. You know, don't think that just because one thing isn't working for you, that there isn't an answer for you at all. There is. It's just, you have to be persistent. And like you said earlier, stay curious. And that should get you on the right path.
I love it. I love it. And I love the idea of pose, you know, setting goals with poses versus time. Mm-hmm. I think that actually will surpass
10 minutes, 5 minutes. It all counts. Don't think it doesn't count. You know, you don't want to slap yourself on the back of the hand and think, I was a bad worker outer today. You know,
any level, yogi.
Yeah. Any level of dedication counts. So keep that in mind as well.
Thank you, Katherine, for your time. And
such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh yeah. And I'll send you a copy of my book, because I think you might get a kick out of it.
I would adore that.
Yeah. For those of you who are listening, I'd love for you to find Katherine on Instagram. Her dog is darling. She is darling. Everything she does is, you know, real, as you can tell, and fun and interesting. And also on Facebook. There's a ton of great information. And KatherineBudig.com. You can also find her blogs on Mind Body Green. And I will love to hear your feedback on this podcast on Mistress of Tea at on Twitter, as well as Zena on Facebook. Thanks so much for joining us. Take good care. Bye, Changemakers.